Greetings and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may call in to share your experiences, colorism, to pose a question, or just to give a general comment. You may do so by dialing area code 914-338-1308. And now, to begin our show, here's Dr. Culbreth. Greetings and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism for Thursday, February 20th, 2014. I'm your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth, and we're coming to you live as we do every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Good evening, everyone. I hope everyone's having a really good week. I am glad that I bounced back. We skipped last week because I ended up with a really bad case of laryngitis. And my voice was completely gone. So we're thankful and grateful that it's back. And we have a really interesting show tonight. Our topic is crabism and colorism, envy, jealous competition, the pursuit of happiness and success. My guest tonight is Dr. Linda Wilson-Jones, and my co-host tonight is Dr. Teresa Stiles. Let me give you introduce you to Dr. Wilson-Jones by giving you a bio. Dr. Wilson-Jones earned her PhD in Educational Leadership and Supervision from Jackson State University. She currently serves as Director of the Office of Research Initiatives in the School of Education. She's Chair of the Faculty Senate at Fayetteville State University, where she's also the Editor-in-Chief and the Founder of the Journal of Research Initiatives, which is an open-access peer-reviewed journal. They launched last year, and they're getting the journals out there and published, and that is quite an achievement. Dr. Wilson-Jones is also a member of the Editorial Advisory Board of the Journal of Colorism Studies. She's working on a study involving colorism. She is also a member of the Committee for the National Survey on Colorism and a collaborating scholar of the Interracial Colorism Project. And Dr. Wilson-Jones has also authored numerous publications. And what's really great, her research that she's focusing in on is on what she's coined as the term crabism, and I love that term. Good evening, Dr. Wilson-Jones. How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fantastic, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for being available, and good evening, Dr. Stiles. How are you?
Good evening, Dr. Culbreth. I am delighted to be here tonight. Thank you for having me here tonight.
Sure, and everyone, in case if you don't remember, Dr. Stiles has been a guest on our show and co-host with me in the past, but she's also the author of Love in Mulberry Grove. She is also the founder of E. Stiles and the principal of E. Stiles Consulting, and she also has this wonderful, awesome, I call it a journal, online under the name of allthisgoodness.org, which is created for women of all colors. It's really great. It's about women talking to each other, sharing stories, great music. She knows I love the songs, and when she changed the song from from the fall, I almost cried. it was my favorite. I loved it. So good evening, ladies. I am excited about the topic.
I'm ready.
A couple of months ago, Dr. Wilson-Jones and I were talking, and we were talking about how, you know, the issues are with crabism, and she came up with the term crabism, and I said it's perfect. So this is a term that she has coined, listeners. But ladies, let's do this, because we're going to talk about the Willie Lynch letter, the crabism defined, the crabs in the barrel, women of color and the issues, feeling threatened, envy, the hater syndrome, the jealousy and jealous competition. We're going to talk about how colorism fits into the mix here. We're also going to talk about celebrating and supporting each other, the pursuit of happiness and success, and writing your own success story. And I'm going to say this even before we get into the show. This week when I was looking around doing some research, I found a really interesting article written by Dr. Melody T. McLeod. She is a medical doctor. excuse me, please, she's a gynecologist, obstetrician gynecologist. She wrote this pretty awesome article on crabs in a barrel syndrome. Will it ever end? And she's also the author of this really awesome book, Black Women. The theme of her book actually is Black Women Redefined. Well, correction, that is, I think, book another woman had written. But her actual book, let me get it right, because you guys know I'm messing this up, Living Well Despite Catching Hell. And it's a really good book that talks about issues that women, that black women deal with. Phenomenal book. And what attracted me to her article about crabs in the barrel is that when she tried to actually have, you know, talk to other black women about her book and ask one of them, I think if she would market it or mention it on a social media site or something to that effect, the woman basically just said, well, that's nice, or congratulations, and just blew her off and would not support her at all or try and celebrate, you know, her success. And I just think that's terrible. And that's the issue that we see a lot with women of color. Even though we know that this crab-in-the-barrel mentality occurs in other races, I think it's more prevalent in the black race, more prominent, rather. So let's start with this. And by the way, if you want to look at that article, it was in Psychology Today. The name of it is Black Women's Health and Happiness, Crabs in a Barrel, Will It Ever End? And it's written by Melody T. McLeod, M.D., and again, she's the author of the book Living Well Despite Catching Hell. So you guys definitely want to look at that. I've also posted a link about this book, about her book, on the Colorism Project Facebook page and Twitter. So ladies, let's start tonight with, let's talk about Willie Lynch. Now, we all know that Willie Lynch is considered like a myth. It's not a letter that has never been proven to have been written. And the main reason why people say that is because of the language that is used in the letter, the way it's written. So, but the point of it is, and Dr. Wilson-Jones made an excellent point when she stated, whether or not the Willie Lynch letter exists, actually was written by this so-called person, Willie Lynch, the fact of the matter is that some of the issues and the little tactics and strategies that they talk about in that letter, we actually see black people doing to each other. Am I right, Dr. Jones?
That's exactly right. And that's how I started with my study and my interest in the crabism and most definitely colorism as well. It started off during the time I was working on my doctorate. And I had the opportunity of making a presentation. It was on African-American men, and I ran up on the letter of Willie Lynch, and it was just so fascinating to me until I just started getting deeper and deeper into it. And I had hoped to do start my study because last year, I believe, it might have been 2012, whenever it was the 300 years. And what I wanted to look at to see have we made any changes from the time that this letter was supposed to have written? But if you think about the 300 years, and that's what really got me, or even longer. And I just feel that a lot of the feelings that we have and a lot of things that's going on is things that's been indoctrinated in us. And I'm not really sure if it's really that we're really aware of some of the things that we're doing to hold each other back. So that's when I really became quite fascinated in Willie Lynch, was from that. And so from that point on, and all my colleagues, whenever they see anything about Willie Lynch or any about the crab mentality, they always make sure that I receive a copy of it.
Wow, interesting. But, you know, and it's interesting, I reread the letter over yesterday, and when I was reading it, you were so right in so many, I mean, you're right with everything you said about this Willie Lynch issue, because of the fact we see so much where, you know, where he's telling them, you know, pit them against each other, the old black male, black male. I look at that in society now where you see how some of the younger black men don't respect older black men.
Right.
That's right.
You know, then you see the dark-skinned slaves, you know, against the light skin. We know that with colorism.
Right.
Light against dark. Male against the female, when we see issues with the black community where you see either a black male who has issues with a black female's success or vice versa. You know, they go through the gender, the height, everything, the weight. My question to you, to the both of you, Dr. Wilson-Jones first, is with Willie Lynch, and we all know, like we said, Dr. Wilson and I both stated, whether it's a real letter or not, even though they can't prove that it's a real letter, the symptoms, the syndrome, the issues that are described there is what we see happening in the black community. Dr. Wilson-Jones, why are we still seeing this in 2014, in the millennium?
You know, I think if I could answer that, I would be a millionaire. What fascinates me so much is the part of the distrust. The envy and the distrust, I think, is the most significant part. I know that to pitch one against the other, but what I think is really holding the African-American community back is the fact of the trust and the and the envy. You know, if I'm looking and I'm seeing, and it even goes back to doing the first presidential election when some comments were made, and I don't know if it's okay to mention that when there was an open mic and Jesse Jackson, instead of celebrating what was about to happen, there was that envy there, and I'm not really sure if he really knew I'm just not sure if we are aware sometimes of what we are doing to each other and who we are doing it to. So that's just one example, and sometimes we have a tendency to think that the problems are in the communities where they might not be politicians or professional people, but it's all the way across the board. I mean, from the welfare line all the way up to the most prominent individuals. And I wish there were something. I don't really know. That it has puzzled me, and it continues to puzzle me. And I see it every day on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Any place, and I mean, and it's not all the time on a professional level. It can be like one of our brothers or sisters maybe get a new car or a house or something. It's just that mentality, that envy, that it's just been ingrained in us, and it's going to take some time. It's going to take really education and knowledge in order to be able to reprogram us to stop thinking in that particular manner.
You're right. You're right. Dr. Stiles, what are your thoughts on this?
I have to agree with the doctor here. In reference to, there is so much distrust and there's so much division within the black community, and we see it in so many arenas, whether it's through Facebook, whether it's on the job, even within our own families, whether it's a skin color or an occupation. But I think once we start to understand who we are, even as individuals, from the perspective of realizing that we are capable of so many things, that we can begin to change ourselves and our perspectives on how we view others. I think what tends to happen a lot of times when there's so much stagnation within an individual's environment and they may see someone else moving forward, then that jealousy kicks in. I think as long as individuals are starting to understand that they can obtain so many things and go in so many directions on their journey, then instead of allowing that green monster to come in of envy and jealousy, then we will begin to not only celebrate our differences, but celebrate our triumphs from an individual perspective. And that is so important. And until we understand and realize that as you move forward, I move forward. And it's not about holding each other back, but embracing each other. And if that's not happening, you're going to continue to have stagnation. You're going to continue to have envy. You're going to continue to have distrust, not only within your environment, but within yourself. So the change has to happen within in order for us to be change agents and empower each other within our environment. So she got to you up. Right.
You know, excellent place. I'm going to tell you, ladies, something interesting. And you laugh at this, and my friend and I, Eli, we talk about this. With me, and he always uses because I'm just different, or he says I'm weird sometimes. I have never, ever, and I can honestly say this from the time I can remember up to now, I've never run into another female who I've been jealous of, other than, of course, Judge Joe Brown's wife, because she's married to him, and thing for him, and of course Michael Jordan's first wife, because I had a thing for Michael Jordan when I was younger. But and that was just, you know, it was just silly, you know, silly stuff. But for me to actually walk into a room or meet another woman and not like her, you know, because of her success or because she may be beautiful, like for example, if I'm out somewhere and if I see a woman has on a beautiful outfit, I think her skin is perfect or her hair is beautiful. I'll tell her. I'll be like, wow, your hair is gorgeous. You look beautiful. Mm. And then one of my friends said to me, well, they may think you're gay if you do that. And I'm like, well, I know I'm not, so I'm not concerned with what they think. But, and I've even had women, you know, more recently since I started blowing my hair out, would actually say to me, you look so pretty. Your hair is beautiful. But I have also noted in just being out in general, where I've seen other black women just give me the look that if looks could kill, I'm dead and buried.
Mm-hmm.
And that disturbed me. And I remember one time when I was talking to a group of my students over at University of District of Columbia, and these are all black females, by the way, and they couldn't for the life of me, they didn't get the fact that this stems from, you know, in a sense, we said like the Willie Lynch syndrome. And it was crab, you know, crab in the barrel mentality. Mm. These young girls didn't see anything wrong with that. Just talking to girls in my neighborhood, where there was an incident once, I'll never forget it, where these two black mothers, one who's a lawyer, the other one, I don't know what she did, but their daughters were having an argument. I think it was about a boy. Both mothers drove their daughters to a parking lot when the store closed for the two girls to fight it out. And when I tried to explain to them, you know, the ignorance and the stupidity of what they were teaching their daughters to do, these girls were like 15 and 16 years old. One of the mothers brought up the crabs in the barrel mentality, you know, syndrome, and said that's why the other girl was jealous of her daughter, because it was a crab trying to pull the daughter down. But I think the way they handled it was wrong, and I don't think they understood that their behavior, to me, was still the crabs in the barrel, them fighting.
Right.
Among, but so Dr. Wilson Jones, how can we actually define crabism? Like, how will we define that?
Okay, I guess crabism to me is so similar to the crab mentality, but the crab mentality is more of a personality type thing. But to me, crabism is more of a selfishness, and if I can't have it, then neither can you. And that's the part that how I define crabism is that when we see someone in a position where they're about to be elevated, it happens on my job, it happens everywhere, that when you see someone about to be elevated or they're about to be successful with something, then you see people beginning to start pulling that particular person down, talking them down, doing whatever they can to possibly ruin their reputation and their professionalism, because they're thinking in their mind, why should she have it or why should that particular person have it? But if I can't have it, then I don't think that the other person should have it either.
Right.
So that's my definition of the crabism, similar to the crab and the bear, similar to crab, the crab mentality, but more of an action type, phenomenal, if you will, just saying that, okay, once again, I'm thinking it's something that's indoctrinated in us because, as you stated, Doctor, before, if I'm successful, then the most logical thing for me to do is to pull someone else up with me.
Right.
But if I'm an individual who, and it tells a lot about a person because, and I think it is in the Bible, what a man thinketh in his heart. So what I'm thinking that a lot of times when individuals, when they do things and react in a certain way, it's because if they were in that same position, then they would probably do the same as well. So just making sure that we do not blockade the door, that we do all that we can to make sure that when we are elevated, that we bring someone else along with us.
That's
so
right.
Just helping someone change that concept of thinking that someone else doesn't deserve something, that I deserve it, but if I can't have it, then neither should you have it. I'd rather see some, and a lot of times, especially with African Americans, we would much rather see someone else, another race, or if it's a gender, we'd rather see if it's two African American women, well, we feel more comfortable. Some seeing the other race maybe having the position. So just changing our whole concept and our mindset about how we can help each other, because if I grow, then you grow as well, whether it's directly or indirectly.
That's right. You know, I can tell you a couple years ago I tried to start, and this is a result of looking around and teaching and seeing that there were so many issues, you know, with black kids in school, in elementary school, middle, high school, and even in college. So I wanted to start the Baltimore Washington Black Educators Association. The goal behind this whole group was to get a group of educators together from all, you know, levels, you know, all the school levels through college, so that they could network and say, okay, this is, you know, the people, the administrators on the college level and faculty could say, this is what the students need to be able to do when they enter college. And they could connect with, you know, the high school guidance counselors or staff or whatever, teachers, and they could start preparing the students. And this would be something that would have nothing to do with everyone's job. It would just be like a mentoring where we would have cycles going. So elementary would know what middle school students needed, and the cycle would go on to high school and to college. I put together this really nice format. I even started a group on LinkedIn, sent a message out to a VP of Academic Affairs at a college I was teaching at. It was predominantly HBCU. And she read it the first one she deleted. The second one I sent back to her, she didn't even respond. So in talking to a couple of other faculty members there on campus, I said, you know, we need to do something to start trying to save these young black people, students, when it comes to education. And if it's not being done where it should be done, then we as educators owe it to these students to help pull as many as we can into the rank, you know, by preparing them. And I had about four or five black women say to me, why in the hell, you know, not all of them said why in the hell, but in so many words, one of them said why in the hell, why are you being bothered with this? Who cares? And another woman came back to me later and said, I would have joined with you and worked with you, but I always dreamed of doing something like this, and because I didn't start it, I said, I'm not going to jump on board and support you when you took something that I wanted to do. And I'm not even going to tell you what I said to her because I can't say it on the air, but my point is that Dr. Wilson-Jones made an excellent point. It's like, if I can't have it or if I didn't do it, then how dare you? And I'll do anything in my power to destroy you, to keep you from being successful in what you're doing. Now, when we start talking about crabs in the barrel, we all know how one tries to climb out and the others will grab them and pull them back down.
Right.
Which I think is amazing because I actually have seen them do that. I don't like crabs anyway. But I've been in places and I've seen them actually do that, and I used to laugh about it. I'm like, isn't this amazing what they actually do? It's like, no, you're not getting out. If we're stuck, you're stuck. Let's talk about women of color. Like, let's talk about black women and the crab and the crabs in the barrel and crabism. Dr. Stiles, mm-hmm. have you experienced this type of mentality with black women?
Oh, absolutely. More than once, of course. Unfortunately, it always seems to be that way. And whether it's social or professional, it's always that feeling of she must think she's better than I am. Oh, she has her PhD of this nature. But I often tell individuals that the things I have is not, they're not who I am. They do not define me. It's what I have obtained, but they're not who I am. Because at the end of the day, when you get rid of all titles, you have to be happy with who you are. And in that process of being happy with who you are, then you're happy for those around you. But that doesn't always seem to come into play with others. And so that constantly happens. And whether it's an environment where people try to challenge your intelligence or try to challenge who you are and or your ethnicity, there's always going to be different issues. So I've learned a long time ago that you have to be happy with who you are, and in the process of changing, if you want to change, you want to do it for yourself, not because you see someone else doing it. But many times it also goes back to socioeconomical and what's going on in that community. If you have individuals who are living in marginalized communities or who have been marginalized and they have only gone so far with their education, then of course they're going to look at you as far as either being intimidated or, you know, or finding themselves inferior. But I learned a long time ago, even with Nelson Mandela when he made that statement, do not dim your light so other people can feel comfortable. And
exactly.
That's what I try to tell my children till this day, because when you're on your road and you're going in your journey, you need to be thankful and you need to be happy and confident in who you are. And there's always going to be others who will judge you and pretty much decide and put you into their category. But I also say as a spiritualist that your God is only as big as you allow him to be. So
excellent.
I see my God as big as I want it to be, which means I can pretty much decide where I want to go in my life. And when you're that comfortable, Dr. Colbreth, then you know your possibilities. You know there are extremes that others may not be able to follow, and that's okay. But it's always come into play in my environment. I find a way to dismiss it and try to help others understand and try to mentor and let them know that just because what I see or what you see and what I have obtained, you do not know what it took for me to get here.
You know,
all have our stories. We all have our
right.
stories of where we have come from and where we are now.
I remember a couple, maybe last month or the month before last on Twitter with Dr. John Kim and I, we were talking about, I don't even know what the heck we were talking about on Twitter, and she likes the social media thing. I'm kind of like the shy one with the social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the type to go on Twitter. I've tried it. I have tried it. God knows I've tried to do the Twitter thing and get in a conversation. But there was a comment posted by a young lady on there who wanted to bash Dr. John Kim and I because we have PhDs. And at no time, I think you both know me very well, I have never, ever been the type to gloat like, hey, I'm Dr. Colbert. I'm just, to me, I'm old. You know, to my friends and to you guys, I'm Donna. Professionally, yes, I'm Dr. Copas. But this young lady made a comment, and the first thing I thought of was, you know what, this jealousy and this insecurity is so ridiculous, because her comment was, just because I don't have a PhD doesn't mean that whatever what she went on to say. So I had to just dismiss her as just being stupid and ignorant and insecure. But what I see too much with women of color is this, you know, again, I could describe it any other way than saying scrabism. But Dr. Wilson-Jones, have you ever experienced it with women of color, black women specifically?
Yes, I'm just trying to think how many times.
Wow.
What I really, and I'm going to give you an example, even as early as today, we had the Faculty Senate meeting today, but I like, Dr. Teresa, what you said a few minutes ago about happiness. One of my favorite quotes from Shakespeare is, "To thine own self be true." And once you, and I tell my students this all the time, I tell my children this all the time, that if you, first of all, before you can love anyone else, you have to love yourself. Before I can make someone else happy and be happy with my world, it has to come within, as you had stated before. So that is very, very important. And when I look a lot of times at women, especially African-American women, what the reasons are. And sometimes I look and I'm like, you're so intelligent, you're smart, you're beautiful, you're all of these things. You're younger than me. So why this attitude? And it has even gotten me to a point, there have been times that I've had to stop and slow down and say, okay, am I sending off the wrong kind of vibes?
Yes.
But I realized that maybe it wasn't, because sometimes people are insecure, and there's nothing we can really do about
right.
those individuals who are insecure with themselves, but just try to reassure them. But one thing that I always say, especially with the administrators, the future administrators who I work with, and the women, I direct it to them, and I say this, in this life, there's always going to be someone who's going to be more beautiful,
right.
smarter, talented, shaper, skinnier,
right.
all of these different things. I mean, it's just human nature. It's going to happen. But as long as you are secure in who you are, then you can have so much more that you can contribute to the world as opposed to being closed-minded. So, and I'll give you an example of today during the meeting. I always send out the agenda before the Senate meeting. And according to the bylaws, I guess I did not go by the bylaws as far as bumping someone down on the agenda. But I send it out, and my thought is that if you look at the agenda and you've had a couple of days to look at it before the actual meeting, if there's a problem, then contact me. But what I've had more situations of people latching out at me from African-American women
mm-hmm.
than any mm-hmm. other women. And that is just so, it's so disheartening, and it's so sad. And I think those things stick with me a little bit more if it was a white female or white male or black male. It seems to not devastate me, but it kind of stays on my mind a little bit more when I see black women or African-American women publicly in mixed groups coming out against another one and trying to show that, you know, in a sense, trying to show that person up. Oh, you think you're smart, you think you this, but you're not as smart. I'm going to show you that you're
mm-hmm.
not as on top of things as you think you are. So those things are, you know, and I guess it goes back a lot to the self-esteem when we are, you know, as young children, when we're going through puberty, girls, when we're going through that, just that having another adult or someone to reassure you that, you know, you are beautiful, that you can do whatever you set your mind to do, and we have to make our own destination, but, you know, with the help of God, always asking him to order your steps, but to not allow someone else to destroy your dreams or determine where you will end up in life.
Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Wilson-Jones, that is, you both of you and Dr. Stiles, you're right on point. I can tell you an experience I had when I worked over as the Vice President of Operations, Assessment, and Institutional Research at a college in D.C. And you guys know, everybody who knows me, I love to wear pearls, and I like to have the long string of pearls wrapped around my neck like 4 or 5 times. That's just my trademark. And I like to have pretty scarves in my neck. And I will never forget this. And this is after I left the college. One of my colleagues, my good friend, came to me, and he said to me, the women at the college were so upset with you, the black women, mind you, not the white women or the other women, because you wore pearls every day. And after you left, they were talking, and one of them said, well, why does she have to wear pearls every day? And I'm like, it's just like you put that wig on your head every day, or you put a ring on or whatever. I love pearls. That's just who I am. I go out of my house, I'll have on a sweater. I could just be going to the grocery store. I have my pearls in my neck and a pair of cool jeans and my ankle boots and my jacket. That's me. That's how I dress. But that stems from the fact that growing up, and I think I told you guys the story about me wanting to wear the house coat around the house with rollers in my hair, and my dad flipped out. He came in one day. Well, my grandma, my dad's mom, would always have, the house coats the ladies used to wear that would button up the front, put the pockets on them? Well, my grandma used to wear them and have, like, 4 rollers in her hair. Remember those hard pink rollers?
Yeah.
And she just didn't look good. And my granddad, would come home to that every day. So I figured one day, I thought that was cool. And I was younger. My dad came home from work. I had on a house coat. I had on house slippers and rollers in my hair. My dad flipped. And I'll never forget this. And he said, look at your mother. Your mother is beautiful every day, all day. And my mom was. My mom is drop-dead gorgeous. And even when my mom was really sick at one point in time, my mother would get up, fix herself up. She was a fox. And she never looked like a hag or anything. And I'll never forget that my dad said to me then, you will always fix yourself up, whether you're inside of the house or outside of the house. Don't you ever let me see you looking like that again. So a couple of weeks later, remember the clogs they had out that were candies? You remember the candy shoes? They were like, open toe sandals, but they were high heels. A couple of weeks later, my dad came home. I had on a pair of hot pants shorts. I had on my high heel candy shoes and my hair flowing back. And he flipped out again. You're not going to be dressing like a slut and a tramp. And I'm like, well, good God, what do you want? You tell me I can't look like this, so I try and fix myself up and look like this. And my dad's point was, your mother doesn't look like that. Your mother is a lady. Your mother is beautiful. So that instilled in me a good sense of self-esteem and pride in myself and respect for myself and my own identity because, when I looked at my mom always did. My mom right now, if I go to visit her, my mother will be up and dressed, hair, makeup, nails, perfect. And we would walk in the house, and I would say, well, where are you going? Nowhere. My mom does it. She'll actually really put on real clothes. And to this day, and she's in her late 70s, my mom looks gorgeous every day. And when she goes out, she runs into women giving her a hard time. A lot. And I think, like Dr. Wilson-Jones and Dr. Stiles, that both of you made excellent points. I think it starts when you're younger with your self-esteem and knowing who you are, pride in yourself. Now, with me, my hair is a honey blonde color, as you guys know. Normally, I was telling Dr. Stiles earlier today, I wear my hair back in a bun because it's just too much work for me to do it. I'm not a hair person. So I love the buns, and I just throw in big earrings and my makeup. And the most amazing thing was Dr. Stiles said to me, she goes, your hair is beautiful. You look so beautiful with your hair out. And I'm like, yeah, but it's just too much work, so I don't do it unless I absolutely have to. But my point is that when I do step out of my door, I always make sure I look good because that's how I was raised, and I have pride in myself. You walk into a store and you see a woman. If I see another black woman in house slippers in a store, the other day it was snowing outside, my friend and I went to the store, to grocery shop, and there was a young black girl walking around the store with house slippers on with no socks and those pajama bottom pants. You know, and I just said, okay, first of all, we're wondering why we get people getting sick with the flu and all the kinds of stuff. You're not dressing right. But number two, this young lady had no pride in herself, none whatsoever. And I noticed her looking at another girl who walked by who was really cute and dressed in a cute little snow-looking outfit, gave her a dirty look and started running her mouth to a friend and talking about the girl loud. And Eli just, you know, he said to me, the crab's in the barrel. And I'm like, but this is so sad because, you know, I'm around a mixed race group of people all the time. I'm, you know, a diverse group of people. And I have noticed that when I'm around people who are not black, I don't really see this going on. But like Dr. Wilson Jones noted, I have been in situations and seen and witnessed where I've seen other black women publicly try to embarrass the living daylights out of someone else out of nothing more but pure jealousy and insecurity.
Absolutely.
And I think also a lot of times that people, that they feel threatened by you. Like, Dr. Wilson Jones, you're highly accomplished. You're a young black woman who And you're accomplished. You know, you're self-sufficient. You take care of yourself. You're involved and you're doing so many different things. And, you know, your track record is there and it's polished. Same thing with you, Dr. Stiles. So when women, I'm thinking that perhaps when they see that, if they're not where you're at, I think what happens is they feel threatened by you. And they look at you as saying, wow, look at everything she has going for her. And I think
a lot of times, not cutting you off, I think what happens is that when women see other women who are successful, I think they kind of picture themselves and say, this is what I really wish, or I wish I was outgoing, I wish I could do this. But sometimes fear holds a lot of people back. So if I'm fearful of success, and I used to, when I used to hear this, when I would hear people say that there are people who are afraid of success, you know, you always think of people afraid to fail, but we have a group of people who are afraid of success because being out there. So when you see someone who is successful or who are doing some of the same things that you would like to do, instead of coming to that person, embracing that person, that's what the smart person would do. There have been so many successful women who I've seen throughout my lifetime. And when I see qualities in individuals, I try to find out, okay, how did you accomplish this? What do I need to do to better myself? Not be jealous of that particular person, but just find out. Or if I like, just like you said, Donna, you were saying that the women talked about the bees and things, and you might think something like that is small, but I've had to encounter those same things.
Wow.
But what I did as a child, and I tell kids all the time, find your role model. My mom and my grandmother, of course, they were teachers and they believed in keeping themselves up. But my mother had a first cousin who I just simply adored. She was a sixth grade teacher. She did her hair all the time, and she always had an extra pair of shoes. My grandmother did too, but she always had an extra pair of shoes. She would walk in her shoes, and then when she would get inside the building, she would change and put on her heels. She always had her nails done, and I remember just sitting there, I said, when I grow up, I want to be just like that. I took some qualities from my mom and from my grandmother, but as far as that I don't know how you call it, carefulness about your dress and being meticulous in the way you dress, and it's something that I looked at and I saw what she did, and I wanted to be just like that. And so, and I have that same way now. If there's an adult, it can be, I mean, regardless, if you're doing something, Don, that's how I found you. When I started my research on colorism and looking at the Willie Lynch, and I started doing a search, and I saw your name. I can't even remember now how we connected, but that's how I did. I said, wow, she's doing some wonderful things. I would like to be able to be a part of that. And that's what we have to teach African-American women. That's what we have to teach
right.
girls, that if it's something, if you see a quality in someone that you would like to have, then adopt that quality. Go to that person. Ask that person, what can I do? How did you do this? How did you accomplish that? What can I do to not be just like you, but what can I do to adopt some of the qualities that you have?
Absolutely.
I'll tell you something, too. When Dr. Wilson-Jones and I and Dr. Stiles, when all of us met, when all of us first, and here's the funny thing, we've never met in person, but when we first met, all of us from day one have uplifted each other.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, because all of us are very, have high self-esteem, very positive, and we know who we are and we know where we're going, but from day one, we've all been like, wow, you're doing this or you're doing that, and we've all supported each other,
mm-hmm.
and like, we bonded and became really good friends, and this started off, I think we were just talking about colorism, and we all ended up finding out we all have so much in common. All of us are doing so many great things in our lives, and we all found out that we were so connected with our projects. And I have to say this to both of you, and I'm not just saying this because we're friends, but Dr. Stiles and Dr. Wilson-Jones from day one have given me my props. They've encouraged me. Pushed me to keep going, because Lord knows I have my moments where I'm like, okay, that's it, I'm done. And the both of them have, like, pushed me and said, no, you're going to keep doing this. You're good at what you're doing. Keep it up. Don't stop. And, see, that means a lot coming from your friends and your colleagues when you're on huge projects. And we're all black women. And the bond that we have is, like, unbelievable. The support, you know, making sure each other's staying on track, getting things done. And Dr. Wilson-Jones made a valid point. This is what we need to do. We need to, when you see someone that has a spark and it has a sparkle, you know, try and connect with them and see exactly, okay, I like what you're doing. I think it's awesome. Let's connect. Let's work together. Let's do something.
Absolutely.
Dr. Stiles, what do you think, why do you think, rather, we know women like Dr. Wilson-Jones know that the fear factor kicks in on them, but when we start seeing this envy, why are we seeing so much envy? As a good example, when the little girl Gabrielle, whatever her name is, Douglas, I think her name is, won the Olympics.
Right, the Olympics, yeah. She's
literally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Torn down. By our own black women worrying about this child's hair, which I thought was just so ridiculous, silly. And there was a recent incident also, and I can't remember it right now, where was another young lady in the news, a black girl, where they were just tearing her. The other Gabby, the girl who was in the movie Precious.
Yeah.
Where
people
were attacking her. Why are we seeing this envy?
I think, you know, we really have to look at ourselves and look within, like Dr. Lindard said earlier, as well as you, Dr. Colbreth. It starts from childhood, and I think we always have to find a way. I read this on Facebook today, and it said, you can be the sweetest peach, but there are people out there who hate peaches. That's just reality, you know. And you can try to make sure that you're doing everything that you can do to be the best person you can be. And you're always going to have individuals that's going to tear you down, because those individuals are not happy with themselves. And it may just be one thing that's not going right in their environment. They could have the perfect job, but they may not feel comfortable in their skin. Maybe their skin darker, maybe their skin lighter, who knows. But whenever you find a place in your existence where you're not comfortable, then it's going to be easy to critique someone else, because we always look at what we do not have, and we always try to compare ourselves to others. That's why it is so important. When I used to self-employed in Michigan and actually implementing programs, I found it very useful not to just teach someone from an academic perspective, but from a spiritual perspective. Because when you allow an individual to tap into that creative and I am within them, then they begin to feel they begin to challenge their hegemonic assumptions. They begin to understand who they are and their capabilities, and it allows them to take that focus off of someone else and what they're doing and channel it within themselves. And that is very important, because we can give an individual the tools they need as far as skills, whether it's vocational, academic, or, you know, job-wise. But if you're not giving them those skills of self-esteem and self-worth, none of that matters. So I think as long as you have individuals, you can go through as many training classes, whether it's an ASTD class or whatever type of program, and get a... Are you there?
Hello?
Hello?
Please leave your message for
Linda Wilson-Jones.
Linda, I don't know how I just did that. Can you guys hear me? Dr. Stiles, I think I have managed to drop everybody, and I will call them back, everyone, momentarily. So everyone, hold on, and I will get everybody back on the line. Something I did. Dr. Stiles. Hi, Dr. Stiles. Yes, I lost you. I don't know why. I think I hit a button on the dashboard. Hold on. Let me reconnect Dr. Wilson-Jones.
Okay.
But Dr. Stiles, can keep talking about the envy thing while I get her back on the line.
Okay. So as long as you're not comfortable with who you are, you're always going to find ways to find fault with someone else.
So when I
look at programs out here and they're doing all of these programs as far as certification, and you can train someone with the knowledge, abilities, and skills to do certain professions. But if they're not doing professional development from a perspective of self-esteem, then you can have the perfect job. But if you're not happy with yourself, you're going to always have self-judgment. You're going to always judge yourself. You're going to always judge others. So until we have an understanding, and it comes back to the beginning of, like I said earlier, of knowing who you are, your self-worth, and knowing that God within you has made you the perfect you, because there's only
right.
one Teresa, there's only one Donna, there's only one Linda, and so we're the perfect at who we are, and it's up to us what we want to experience in life. But
you're
we
right.
have individuals
right.
who are stagnant, they're uncomfortable, they're not happy with their jobs, they're not happy with their finances, they're not happy what's going on in their environment, then they're always going to look at someone that may not be as attractive as they are, and they're going to focus in like a hawk on those traits that may not seem so perfect on someone else, and make them and magnify it 10 times to pick it out on that person just to make them feel better. And that
they
goes
do.
Into bullying. It goes into
they
so many things that we see not only in our lives, but we talk about kids bullying. Adults do it the same. Adults do it all the time because of the self-esteem issue.
That's right. Dr. Wilson-Jones, did I get you back?
Are you happy back?
Okay. I'm adding in Mika Mayshak. She's going to talk, join in the conversation also. Ms. Mayshak, are you there? I'm wondering if it's me. You guys know I have issues with the telephone sometimes, right?
Yeah, blame it on the weather.
I think what you did, Don. I think you called me back. I think you must have been trying to dial in the other person, but I think that's what happened. You dialed me back. I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I was busy talking, Dr. Linda, and I kind of realized that there was silence, and I could hear crickets, and I said, uh-oh, what did I do?
Ms. Mayshak, are you with us? Ms. Mayshak? I think
we don't have her. Maybe she'll call back. So it is important. We have to continue to see
okay.
who we are and challenge those assumptions that we tend to give power to, and we end up judging ourselves in the process. Until we stop doing that, until we give, and like I told, we were speaking earlier, Dr. Colbert, and when I had made that mention, is we kind of allow ourselves these titles, and we get so caught up in these titles, and we begin to define ourselves by these titles. And when we do not live up to all of these titles that either we have assigned or our family has assigned or academia has assigned or our professional environment has assigned to us, then when we do not live up to those expectations, then we become this big judge. And our mind starts judging us just like we judge others. And then it becomes, you're not pretty enough. You don't have good self-esteem. And until we get rid of that judge and start embracing each other for our differences, I don't know everything, you know. I find it out if I don't know it. That's what I used to tell my students. And stop looking at ourselves as if we have to know everything, we have to do everything, but just be who you are. And enjoy your journey in the process. And when you're ready to learn something new, go ahead, explore.
That's right.
And when you allow yourself to channel from that perspective, my belief, you allow yourself to relax and to breathe and to accept one another and enjoy one another and embrace one another for who we are and not who we're trying to make them
be. You're right. I'm trying to get Dr. Wilson-Jones back. I disconnected her. Ms. Mayshak, can you hear me?
I think we don't have her, Dr. Caldwell.
I'm so sorry. I'm messing up everybody.
That's okay.
Ms. Mayshak, can you hear me? I'm trying to call into you. I'm not getting a response there, but our number here is 914-338-1308. I'm going to try and get Dr. Wilson-Jones back. She's probably going to shoot me, and I don't know what I did. I remember this happened to me last year, and one of the board of directors members for the Colorism Project sent me a very firm, very, very firm message and said, get it together. He was livid with me.
It happens, you know. We can blame it on the weather. We can blame it. It's on the Thursday evening, you know. It's
Dr. Wilson-Jones, have you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm funny, Ms. Mayshak. Okay, ladies. Let's try this. Hold one second. Ms. Mayshak? Hello? Yeah, I can't get it. Yeah, I lost. I can't get it. I don't know what I'm doing. Something's wrong. So I'm going to leave it alone before I lose everybody again. Let me try something else. Miss Mayshak, are you there? Hello? Okay, I'm laying low on this one, ladies, because I'm screwing up royally. Sorry to interrupt the conversation, but we were talking about envy, weren't we?
Yes.
Well, what about this hater syndrome that we see going on? Dr. Wilson-Jones, you know, when we see women who just automatically just hate someone just because.
Once again, I think that goes back to a personal how we feel about ourselves. If I cannot love, if it's hard for me to love myself, when I look in the mirror, if I don't, regardless to the fact that I've put on a few pounds or whatever, but if I love myself, then it's going to be easy to love someone else. But if I look in that mirror, what I'm seeing I don't like, or if I'm not satisfied with my life, whatever that is, and I feel handicapped or that my hands are tied, that I can't do anything with it.
That's right.
To improve my life,
that's
then
right.
That filters on over. You see it every single day, at least I do, in the workplace. And a lot of times, if you follow those individuals home, it has nothing most of the time to do with the job.
Right.
Their own personal feelings, because if I'm unhappy at home, if I'm unhappy with my life, if I'm unhappy with the decisions that I've made, if I'm just unhappy, then that's going to be a part of my everyday demeanor.
Absolutely.
So where it's got to start, and I know we always say self-esteem and loving ourselves, and we have all these different things. I talk with girls. I go talk with different children about loving yourself and celebrating yourself and all of these things. But sometimes I just think it just falls over people.
I do,
too.
And
they don't really realize it.
Dr. Wilson-Jones, what do you think?
Huh?
I'm sorry, Dr. Stiles.
That was me.
Now
we're beginning to sound alike, huh?
Oh, no. I'm having a moment tonight.
Dr. Stiles.
I said blame it on the weather. That's okay. Blame it on the weather. I totally agree with Dr. Linder. She's absolutely right. I mean, she hit the head. What is it?
The nail on the head.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Because we do, and somehow something's falling short in reference to that, loving ourselves. But it goes back to what's in the media. You know, we can constantly keep telling our children, you know, who you are, you know who you are and your capabilities. But there's so much is so much out there in social media about the standard of beauty, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, Dr. Cobra, that an individual is sometimes social media could be so empowering in reference and then so overwhelming to what the standard of beauty is. So when you have that child who may not have the straight hair, or the thin nose, or the small lips, and a body size that doesn't fit, you know, what the standard of beauty is, then she is going to have to, she may go through some changes. And so, but starting from home, and if she sees that parent, it does. It starts from us, because their ceiling is only as high as our ceiling. And if we're not feeling good about ourselves, then I don't care how much you tell that child. If your actions are not displaying that you feel worthy and you feel good about yourself, then how is that child going to pick that up and embrace it? Because
that's true.
They stem from you. They are who you are. They're just a creation of you, you know?
That's right.
We have to, as parents, it is vital for us to understand that I don't care if you had a bad day last night. When you wake up and when you put your feet on that ground, first you have to be thankful, and second, you have another chance.
That's right, to make it right.
Something wonderful. So when
excellent.
That child wakes up in that morning, she feels that love from you. She feels that connection with you. If you
have to wake up early during
the morning, in order, there's one thing I do. I know my child has to be at that bus station at a certain time, and you better believe I'm going to be up and everything I need to do to make sure that she understands that through my actions that I
good.
Love her. That
hold on,
my,
I have Miss Meshack. Miss Meshack, are you there?
Oh,
I am here. I am
welcome,
here.
Welcome, Miss
Meshack.
Welcome.
Hey, Miss Meshack.
Thank you. Mika is fine.
First, let me apologize to you for bumbling up trying to connect you in on the live on the AR. I sincerely apologize to you as
no
well
problem.
As my and my listeners. But what I wanted to ask you was, what are your thoughts on the crabism and on the this crabs in the barrel syndrome and issues that black women deal with? What are your thoughts?
You know, I was thinking as I was listening to the call, and we've spoken before, and to me it kind of boils down to two different things. And the first being that it's so hard. I'm an African-American woman. I'm a chocolate African-American woman with very coarse hair and a very shapely body. And I know I feel, still in my 30s, that I don't get a good feeling from so many things that I watch on TV or I boycott from watching on TV because I don't see the images that uplift us.
Right.
And I think that we're buying into that. So if I'm a woman and I don't feel very good about myself or I feel that my body parts are the only thing that really define me or make me beautiful and I have to marry an athlete and I say all these things and I married an athlete.
I
say that, you know, with understanding because I was not that way. But if those are the images that we see, it is hard for us to look at other women of color and think that there's something as well because we don't feel it in our own selves. And I think that is a very difficult thing. And like the doctor was saying prior to me, it has to start at home. My daughter is 8, and she won't need another person to tell her how wonderful she is. But unfortunately, a lot of kids don't have that because a lot of their mothers are hurt. They're just broken. So I feel like we have to go the extra mile of doing that. And the other piece I was listening to as far as the crabism, I got that from every direction.
Do you think it's jealousy?
I hate to say that because I feel like we all have a unique presence in this world and a special energy. So who should be jealous of me? They have something that I don't have. So I hate to use that term, but many could see that it's jealousy. I try not to get caught up in that because if I accept that they're jealous of me, that means I have something that they wish they had, and I try to remain humble. So that's why I don't see it. I choose to not look at it in that light. But, yes, if they don't feel good about themselves and they see someone else that's confident and that's beautiful – and that's willing to talk to whomever,
mm-hmm.
of course they feel intimidated. So I try to look past their behavior towards me of being mean or giving me the side eye or whatever the case may be, and I try to focus on them. And truly, this is what I'm a therapist, and this is what I've learned that's helped me deal with this. I truly try to look for the beautiful in them. It is so hard for somebody to be mean to you when you are genuinely complimenting them or genuinely getting to know them. It's
right.
so
That's right.
hard.
It is.
It's so hard. So I am a believer in that love characteristic of that smile of my body language, and I believe that I've been able to break through many, many walls that way. And it took some bumps and bruises. I went to a historically black college for one semester. I was from the inner city, and my parents moved to the suburbs, and I was the darkest thing ever and was not considered beautiful at all. So I was so ready to go to an institution and be around many black people. And I had scholarships. I was a track athlete, scholarships everywhere. I turned down Berkeley, other top colleges, and went to a historically black college. And what I wanted to get out of that, I didn't quite get my experience. Other people may. But I got so much hatred. And it
That's
was
right.
so based on my outer exterior. And I got that from women, and because I was shapely, I got a lot of attention from men, and that further made me not feel so good about myself. Because if you can ask for my phone number before you even know what my name is, before you see if I have a nice smile or if I'm warm, that's not building me up.
Mm-hmm.
So it took some time to understand that. And it was a growing process. So I make it a point to try to mentor other women of color, and they don't have to be black. They don't have to be dark. They don't have to be exactly like me. But colorism is—you spend every week talking about it. It's huge, and it's not just us. But I try to do that. One last thing: my mother is a very, very light-skinned, beautiful woman. I love her to death. And my dad is a very, very dark man. And I found that my mother, I didn't feel like she could relate because she was not seen in the world as I was seen in the world. And she tried. She loved me. It hurt her. She was very, very, very fair when I was younger, and her side of the family was. So I really felt isolated in her understanding. And look, Mom, the man that picked you, he didn't pick a dark woman. He picked a light, very fair woman. Mom, you can't quite understand what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, it warms my heart when there's a biracial family and the mother comes up to me and she says, would you mind? And she's always very uncomfortable, like, I don't know if I should be saying this, but would you mind just spending a little bit of time with my daughter? And I have no problem with it because we can't be everything to everybody. But what I can be to somebody, that's what I need to be.
Absolutely.
I love
does that.
That
make sense?
It does. A lot of sense because Dr. Wilson-Jones and Dr. Stiles earlier were bringing up the same points. And I think when we start opening ourselves up, and I think it's about thinking out of the box and getting out of this little closed-minded, I call them narrow-minded, illogical safety nets that people like to stay inside. They like to stay inside a safe area.
Right.
And if they're accustomed to being, you know, looking at someone with envy and being jealous, I think they stay there. They get stuck in that box or stuck on that page and they just can't get out. And even
a lot of times they don't even realize
psychic prison,
how big it is for them. And that's
mm-hmm.
what I try to not take it out on them or not think of them. And that's why I focus on just kind of breaking down those barriers, because we can walk around mad all day, because I'm sure all of us on here, especially if I ended up, the end of my story is I ended up at Berkeley and graduating from Berkeley. So I understand you think you're better than everybody because you got a degree from a top school
or a
doctor or what have you. I've gotten that as well, but we could walk around angry all the time. And so I've had to learn to look beyond that.
Right.
And that love just will chip away at a hard surface and unveil something very, very beautiful if we take the time to do that.
Excellent. Let me ask you, let me ask the next question. I'm going to start with Dr. Wilson-Jones. Ms. Mashek, do you mind staying on with us?
Oh, no problem. No problem.
Dr. Wilson-Jones,
mm-hmm.
when we start looking at crabism, what I have noticed, and tell me if I'm wrong, everybody, where you see, and I think you touched on this earlier, where another woman is not going to be willing to acknowledge your success or give you your prop. When we look at crabism, is that part of that as well? Does that fall into the same category?
Yes and no, I think.
I think that the crabism part is just the fact that not wanting someone to have it. But I guess after you, I look at it not giving you your prompts when you're doing things, when you're being successful, as more of envy and jealousy. I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, I was heading a search committee for the associate dean for the School of Education. And one of the professors who was none, she was not a black, she was not African American or not a woman of color. She started complimenting me, and she told me what a wonderful job that I had done with the search committee, how I went through with all the paperwork and all of that. So she was giving me my prompts. She didn't have a problem with it, but this is what she said. She was the only woman that was not of color in our particular group, and it was all women who were on the search committee. When she said that, she said, well, I think that we all need to applaud Linda for what she has done. And so no one said anything. Wow. Not one single thing, and that was really, it was really kind of sad. And then she said it again. And then one of the ladies said, well, yeah, it was okay, but who is really good is another black female. Instead of her saying, okay, yeah, Linda, you've done a wonderful job, but instead of saying that, she took it away from me and gave it to someone else. And that's another form of pitching one against the other. And that's when when she said that, I was just wondering, did she realize what she's doing? Instead of just saying, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, you did a good job, Linda. And then maybe said, and also, this other person does well with what she's doing. But instead the person said, well, no, this person is the one who's really doing a wonderful job. And I thought that was, it was really sad and it was really uncalled for. So sometimes that envy and that jealousy, and you wonder how, you know, especially when you look at the where it's coming from, you say, well, this person is successful, this person is doing well in their own arena, so why would anyone be jealous of a little person like me? And it's heartbreaking. It really is when people cannot even say, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. They don't have to repeat what the person said. Yeah, you're right. But for a Caucasian woman to give me my props, and for three or four other African-American women in there, not one person would speak up, and then the one who did speak up would take it, would say, well, you know, no, Kim or the other person is the one who is really the person who's doing such a wonderful job. And I just, I didn't understand that.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think, do we see more of this happening with black women? Or is it just women in general?
I know it's women in general. Yeah, it's women. But I have had more of it to happen with my own sisters. And I think that's what, because there are certain things, just like I joke around and tell people, you know, that certain things you expect from your from other races. You know, I expect to not be, you know, whatever it is when it comes to me and another race. But when it comes to my own race, I think it has a deeper, to me, there's a deeper hurt, because I don't expect, I didn't expect her, this Caucasian woman, to give me my prompts, because she was really outnumbered in that particular setting. But I would say that it should have come from one of my sisters.
Ms. Meshack, what are your thoughts?
No, I think, Right. I absolutely think it's the concept of what we're talking about. And crabism is a different mindset. It's not just jealousy and envy, which I think women, you know, will experience. But the crabism, the fact that those three women chose to not acknowledge how powerful or talented, even if the great doctor didn't say many great things, you could pick one. I'm sure
right.
she said something to compliment. But the mere fact that they did not, it's the mindset that if she's good, then I can't be good.
Mm-hmm.
Where in other races, I don't feel like that as, it's as much. It's that, you know, if you see a pretty, and I you know, we moved to a very, very upper middle class, Caucasian, non-diverse area in California where I there weren't many of us. But I know that a lot of the girls and the young women felt like, well, if Mika gets that position, then none of us are going to be able to get this position. If she gets acknowledged, there's only going to be one. They can only acknowledge one black. And I think that's that mentality. If I need to keep her from getting to the top so we can all stay down here in the pot,
right.
or if she gets to the top, then that means I can't get to the top. She took it from me. She's
right.
first, and there's only going to be one. And that's so contrary, and I share with women all the time when I do therapy with them, there is more than one room, more than enough room in the sky for more than one star.
Right.
There is enough room in the sky for more than one star. I can't dim your light.
Right.
That's
you
right.
don't have to worry about me dimming yours. So let's grab hands and let's both get up there together. But
that's
we
right.
have to teach that over and over. And I mean, look at the shows. We don't see that. If a couple of friends, two friends will be best friends one day and killing each other the next. And that's
You're
what
right.
we see on reality TV over and over, and which is why I don't watch it. Because
Me
it
neither.
Perpetuates mm-hmm. it perpetuates that, and that's what we have amongst ourselves. And it's just not it's not a way for us to get to where we need to go.
Absolutely.
What about jealousy and jealous competition? Dr. Stiles, when we look at seeing women who get jealous of each other, and I'm going to focus in on black women mainly, what can we do, when you're in a situation and you know that someone is just jealous, and then you start seeing jealous competition with that person, what are you going to do?
I can recall my mother. She always used to say to me when I would run, I was in any type of situation of that manner, and she always would say, "Kill them with kindness."
Right.
That's your best. That's the best thing you can do, because you got to learn, and I had to learn a long time ago. You cannot allow anyone to take your energy because
mm-hmm.
it can happen, and the
That's
moment
true.
That you get on that plateau with them. And you allow them, that means you accept it. So for me, I had to learn a long time ago that people are always going to have their judgments. They're always going to have their perspectives on how they see yourself or how they see you or how they see themselves. So for me, it's important, and it was important even then, is to remember who I was and who I am till this day. Because you're always going to have individuals who may see you as a threat or that's intimidated. As Ms. Mika said, that you cannot let your light dim in order for others to feel comfortable
mm-hmm.
with who they are. You have to keep moving forward, and you have to. And even if that means you have to prove yourself, that's something you have to do. I can recall. There was this lady I was work at the time, and she was a manager, and I think she thought I was one of these individuals that came in fly by night who pretty much was utilizing my looks, I guess, to get into my position. And when she found out that I was actually in the process of completing my doctorate, her personality changed and the way she viewed me. So you're always going to have those who come with this ideal of this perception of who they think you are. But you have to remain true to yourself always, and you have to allow yourself to believe that you cannot allow anyone else to take your energy, if that makes sense.
Right. It does. Dr. Wilson-Jones, what are your thoughts when we have to deal with the jealousy and a jealous competition?
Well, I will mimic what was just said, that just never losing focus on who you are and understanding. And when you were mentioning that, my mother would always say things similar to that, that, you know who you are, be confident in who you are. And my grandmother would not necessarily say kill them with kindness, but she would always say feed them out of a long-handled spoon, which means that, you know, you still be nice to them, but you have to, you cannot consume yourself with people who are taking your energy, as someone has just said. So speak, go on, never lose focus on what you are trying to do. Always be there to help, regardless. There are going to be times, because that's the way God works. You know, he will make it in, put those people or those individuals in a position where they will have to come to you, or you will have to work together in a group. But and as long as you can show and prove to other people that you are not what they say that you are, that you are who you are, I've gone through life and people saying, I think, you know, Linda thinks this, Linda thinks that. But for someone to tell me what I'm thinking, that's power. So I just, you know, I don't get it sometimes, but always remember to treat people the way you want to be treated.
Absolutely.
And when you see that things are happening and that, because sometimes we can't associate with people. Sometimes we have to pull away. And I know in the workplace we do have to work with them, but I always use that training from my grandmother, speak, work with them. People don't have to necessarily know how you feel about things or how hurt you feel, but just feed them out of a long-handled spoon. Speak to them. Treat them nice. Treat them the way you wish that they would treat you or that you would want to be treated. And I think that as time moves on, because I have seen it, that those very people who, before they got to know me, they were not necessarily my greatest allies, but once they got to know me and realized that it's more to me than the outside,
right.
You know, there are other things about me that can be useful to others as well. So I think that what we do is we look at the outside of a person and we immediately start forming opinions about people. She thinks this, you know, whatever, but as long as we are true to who we are and we don't try to change our attitudes and our personalities and our demeanors for someone else, then I think people really will get to a point where they really learn to respect you for who you are. But I think that people, I don't think a person will really respect a person who changes every time the wind changes. If this group says this way, so I've got to change to accommodate those people. So I think if you can just be true to who you are, then I think that you can find success.
Excellent. Great point. Ms. Mashak, what are your thoughts on the jealousy and jealous competition?
I hear what you're so cute, because my father would say, treat them with a long-handled spoon. I've heard that
yeah,
one,
mine.
And I took and I understand, and I think, you know, like I was saying with the other doctor, I kill them with kindness. And the thing with jealousy versus envy, when I know that, and I don't like to use that term jealous, but it's a suspicion of me having something or not being able to share what they want. And when I take the time to get to know them, they're not suspicious anymore. That jealousy seems to go away. So for me, the killing them with kindness, and that's why I say being genuinely interested, because I can sniff someone out that's not genuine.
Yeah, me too.
Genuinely interested in that other person breaks down those walls. But I will say this, it took me some time to get there.
Okay.
So there was time that I needed to just be cordial and keep distance and keep building myself. And then there was another time when I was older and had a lot more experience and a lot more training and all of these things that I learned to kill them with kindness, and it's worked for me. But that's not for everybody. Sometimes you can't. That energy thing is for real. And if you spend so much time trying to get to someone and they have depleted you, it's not. Neither one of you guys are walking away with something.
That's you're right.
I absolutely get it.
Excellent. I remember my friend said to me once before. He said, "Why don't you ever get jealous and you don't try and do the competition thing hard?" I said, "Listen, I am me. I'm different from everybody. I'm unique. I have my own style of dress, my style of doing everything that I do. And for me, the time that would be spent wasting time being jealous of somebody else, I could be using that time doing something for me. And you're not that person." And I think Dr. Wilson-Jones and Dr. Stiles and Ms. Mack, Ms. Mashak, you all mentioned this earlier. You're not that person. You will never, ever be that person. You're jealous. Why are you wasting your time? And I mean, going through those emotions. And I remember my friend, he said to me, "You blow people off." I said, "No, I don't." And he said, "Yeah, you do." I said, "I do not." So we had this little debate for like 5 minutes, which is ridiculous, over whether or not I blow. I said, "No, I don't blow people off. I choose to ignore them." I believe, like you guys said, I feed them with long-handled spoons. And he said, "Yeah, but when you feed them with a long-handled spoon, you have like an extension rod on the end of that spoon." And I'm like, so I had to just shut up because I realized, he's right. I mean, because it's for me, because all of us are professional women, and we're so busy, not just with our careers, our personal lives, our families, just being us. We don't have that time to waste on, well, at least, we don't have time to waste on those type of emotions because they don't get you anywhere. And Ms. Mashak, you made a good point. I've met people who've looked at me and just didn't like me just because they don't like the way I look. And didn't open my mouth, didn't say a word. I remember years ago, I think I was like maybe 20-something, I was dating an Asian guy, and I remember the very first time, I think he looked at me, I don't know how it was, but I didn't like him. No, I didn't like him in the beginning. He didn't like me. I don't know how it went. Anyway, we ended up being really good friends. We went out on a couple of dates. But when I met some of his friends and vice versa, they instantly looked at this guy and just didn't like him, just did not like him for whatever reason. They did not. And I remember later on a guy said to me, one of my other friends said to me, "It's this jealousy thing that's going on." And, when you're young, you don't look at it like that. I'm like, who has time to be jealous? I'm too busy trying to do things. Now that I'm older, I look at it the same way. I'm still friends with this same guy, and we laughed about it a couple weeks ago. We laughed at the fact that the different emotions you have when you're younger, and he kind of touched on the crabism stuff. That's why I think it's so amazing that you have when you're younger. And as you get older, you would think that some of that would just go away. As you mature and you learn more and you do more. But I've noticed with a lot of people, it just doesn't. It just stays there. And his point was that the same attitudes that a lot of people have when they're younger, they do get stuck on those pages, and you see the jealousy and the nonsense still surfacing. So let's move in. Let's go in the other direction. Let's talk about the colorism with it. When we see the crabism and the colorism is an issue, with that crabism, now we have a bigger, uglier problem to deal with. So, Dr. Wilson-Jones, when we have crabism and colorism together, how awful is that?
It's pretty bad. And I know, and I'm trying to figure out how to really explain this, because with crabism is, trying to stop someone from accomplishing what they're trying to accomplish. But with the colorism, it's also a mindset, because I'm judging someone by the way they look. I feel that if a person is a certain color, and we see it all the time, for instance, you know, if there are two or three kids that's there, and one is darker than the other one, you know, so of course the one who is the most beautiful to some people are the ones that's the fair skin. But when we move into the workplace, we find the same things happening, maybe not to the same point, but on a different level. A lot of times I have looked at some of the key people in organizations or in the university, and you wonder, how did that person really get there? And a lot of times it's because of the color of their skin or the way they present themselves as far as their hair. So to have someone who is, you don't like that person because, you know, you are applauding that person because of the color of their skin or, you know, because the complexion of their skin, then sometimes those people are able to gravitate to the top a whole lot faster than the others.
That's true. Ms. Mashek, what are your thoughts when you see crabism and colorism together?
Yeah, she hit the nail on the head. They're two different ideologies, but it's very when they're combined, it makes it difficult. But if you separate the two out, you know, it's still tough. You know, you have that what we've been talking about, that mindset of I don't want you to get there. If you get there and I don't get there, that's saying something about me as opposed to anything else. And if you pair that with, you know, if I do get there or if I don't get there, it's because of the way that I look, the color of my skin. Oh, she got there because of this. She was attractive. She was light. She was white, whatever the case may be. You know, it just perpetuates this cycle.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And since you're talking more about African-American women, I think we have to be so cautious. And that's why I mentioned before, we might see that a little bit more in our culture. You pair those two things with what we see in the media, and then we pair that with a lot of broken homes, a lot of broken homes, and a lot of people who didn't have the resources to get mental health, to get financial help, and you pair all those things together, yes, you are going to have some really broken women that it's almost hard for them to see another woman succeeding. Because it's like, that's not going to be me. That can't be me. Or why is that her? Why did she get that opportunity? And it's tough. And I try to stay in that mindset, like I said before. Or I would walk around very, very angry. People dislike me, you know, have disliked me just because the size of my behind or the color, you know, of my skin. Or it's dark, but it's smooth or whatever the case were. Just the way I walk or my voice or whatever the case may be. I would be upset all day, every day. And I don't choose to be that way.
I can tell you years ago when I worked at an insurance company here in Maryland, it was my first job here as a compliance analyst in the legal department. And I remember my supervisor calling me in. And at that time, you know, I didn't really think it was color, but it was colorism. And it was also an issue where she made the comment. She said, I can't stand your voice. I don't like to hear your voice. Your voice drives me insane. You sound New Yorkish. I said, I'm from Jersey. And she said, well, still the same. And I'll never forget that, because I wish to God then that I really knew, or I was really into studying the colorism thing, because I would have clobbered this woman and came back at her and said to her, you know, you have issues. But I think when we start seeing the colorism, we see crabism occur as a result of a colorism issue. I think that's the worst it can really get, because now you're saying because that person's white or dark, you know, the crabism is kicking in. I'm jealous of them. I'm envious or whatever we want to term it. I think that is even worse, especially in the work environment, let alone just in a regular everyday routine outside of work. Dr. Stiles, what are your thoughts on the crabism and colorism together?
I agree with... both. I agree with all of you that it is, and it's about the perception and our virtual worlds and how we perceive them. When you have individuals that they're already insecure with who they are, then any time they see anyone getting ahead, then it gives them that ammunition to move forward, to discredit them or to not allow them to succeed. And we have to be very careful of that, because once we start doing that to each other, we're doing that to ourselves in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
So we have to be, and that goes into self-awareness of knowing who you are, going back to everything we've covered before. And until we go through that self-reflection stage and analyze what we're doing, not only to ourselves but to each other, then we're going to continue to present that. It's almost like a pollution. We're putting it into the atmosphere, and those thoughts are going out, and they're coming back. And they're coming back, and they're not only affecting ourselves, but they're affecting our children, mm-hmm. our household, the environment around us. So we have to find a way to self-reflect and bring self-awareness, so there's Dr. Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., and he has a book out, and it talks about that, and it talks about what type of messenger are you. Are you one that's going forth and bringing forth lies into the environment, or are you a messenger of spreading good seeds and helping others along their process? And once you start analyzing who you are, when you wake up in the morning and you look at yourself in the morning, who are you looking at? Are you actually analyzing yourself? Are you actually trying to bring some type of self-awareness to your environment to challenge who you are to create an environment where your self-esteem is better one day at a time? So until we do that, we're going to continue to have crabism. We're going to continue to have those negative concerns and bringing forth into the environment that's not helping, that's actually causing confusion and chaos, not only within ourselves but in the environment.
Excellent point. Now, Ms. Meshack earlier mentioned that how the media perpetuate this crabism thing, but I was just thinking as we were all talking, what I've actually seen with the media when we start talking about colorism and crabism combined together, I also see the media playing a big role in keeping the cycle going, because let me tell you why. I mean,
absolutely.
Do you guys agree? Am I wrong?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Agree.
Absolutely.
And what made me think about that is, and I, you know, it slipped my mind that quickly, but I'll get back, I'll remember it sooner or later. But the point is that I've noticed also with issues, especially, you know, in the news, where you will see, you know, they're pitting two people against each other from the same race, black, of course. And I'm also beginning to notice that if someone makes an issue, let's say, for example, I'm always complaining. You guys know I fuss 24/7 about the fact that we were not seeing enough brown and dark complexion people of color on television in positive roles, and we definitely were not seeing them in commercials for products and services. And then what I noticed they started doing, and this is a conversation I had with a gentleman last year, a guest on the show about marketing and advertising. He noted how they started using people who were mixed race, where you couldn't tell what their racial identity, what their racial category was, rather. And that, in a sense, said to me, okay, we went from all white people in commercials to a few lighter brown-skinned blacks, lighter complexion, and they skipped over the darker complexion blacks and dark brown skin and went to mixed race people whose race you can't really tell what they are. And my guest made a good point when he brought this up, but is it wrong, or am I too far out there in left field by saying that it appears that by them doing that, they're keeping that crabism in a sense going, where they're saying, okay, we're not putting brown or darker complexion, let's say black people, in a positive light in commercials and advertisement and marketing, but we're moving to mixed race people and we're overlooking this segment of the population. Do you think that is then saying to brown skin and darker complexion black people, okay, why are they putting this light complexion or brown complexion person with wavy hair and more Eurocentric features in all of these commercials and advertising as opposed to blacks, dark brown skin and dark-skinned black people? And do you think that starts that crab mentality then between these two groups of people? Or is that too far-fetched?
I think that it's more of colorism than it is crabism.
Okay, good.
That's what I think. I think that if I'm looking at that and if I have that that mindset, then in my mind I'm thinking that if I am lighter complexion or if I have the straighter hair or if I fit in this particular category, then that I could possibly be successful. So I'm looking at that as more as colorism, and maybe crabism is more of an individual mindset, I guess, where colorism is more broad, I think. But with crabism, it's my attitude about someone who I might have a, not necessarily a personal relationship, but I would have to have some kind of contact with that person in order to even exhibit that, because there's no way for me to try to hold somebody else back or try to keep someone from accomplishing their goals or for me to have an attitude that someone should not have something if I'm not there connected with that person in some way, whether it's personal, social, professional. But for colorism, I think it's more of, I see you out there, and I don't know anything about you, but I think you're the most beautiful person just because of what I'm looking at and what I'm seeing. So you walk into an interview, and I've never seen you before, but you walk in, and your credentials might not even be the same as someone else, but because of my mindset as far as the colorism is concerned, I think that you are the most qualified person. And once again, it goes right back full circle to Willie Lynch and what happened during that particular time. If you were the lighter-skinned person, then chances are you had ties or connection with the master, so you were in the house. Mm-hmm. So then all of that, as I said, has just stuff that has been indoctrinated in us, and that's what we really and truly believe. And some people don't really realize that they are doing it. I know they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call it a psychic prison. Let me give you a scenario for everybody. You're working in the work environment, and there's a light-skinned person and there's a dark-skinned person, right? And you work together. And let's say I'm going to be the perpetrator here. And let's say I am treating both light-skinned and dark-skinned. Let's say you're both two new people and we're working together like 2 weeks. And I target the lighter-skinned person because I don't like her because her skin is light and she has this crinkly hair and Eurocentric phenotypes, but she's a black woman, and she identifies as a racial category as black. But let's say I don't like her because of that. Now, that's where the colorism kicks in, right?
Mm-hmm.
The darker-skinned person I have no problem with. We get along great. But I don't like this other girl because of colorism. So now I start participating in crabism type of behavior with her. So I've made a distinction based on her skin color. She's light. And I'm going to start doing little crabism activities. Like, for example, let's say if they gave her promotion to be a manager of the department after 2 weeks, and I've been there 19 years. And I'm serious. Now, remember, I don't like her because of her skin color already.
Right.
Possible if we focus on crabism, that I start trying to pull this woman down because of the fact that, remember, it's a colorism issue. I don't like a skin color. And number two, I'm saying, well, if I didn't get this promotion, and I've been here for 19 years, I'll be damned if she's going to get it and get this increase and so on and so on. Is it possible then that I could start participating in crabism-type behavior?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is Mika Meshach. And I think since we're talking specifically about African-American women at this juncture, I think it's difficult to separate them out. I think crabism comes oftentimes as a result of colorism.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have very few people, because of their color, getting a certain, like you mentioned with the media, there's only, you know, one slot for a chocolate black woman, you know, on the screen there. And as a result of that, the other women start to have this crab mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think that they're mutually exclusive. I think that one can affect the other when we're talking about us. If we're talking in general about colorism, I think there's different dynamics within subgroups, within the whole topic. But with us specifically, I think oftentimes the crabism comes as a result of colorism. Does that make sense?
It does. I like that. It does.
It makes perfect sense.
And not to disagree with the doctor before, because I can see where she was coming from. I just try to look at things a little bit different at times and say, you know, when my son was doing commercials, you know, I'm looking at this, I see only this specific natural short hair, kind of a little bit heavier, dark black woman in the commercial, and I don't see anybody else who's dark. I don't see anyone with long flowing hair. And okay, so if that's me and I'm different, I'm going to think there's not a position for me. Let me pull her down. Hopefully she doesn't get that commercial, and maybe I'll finally get a chance at that commercial. So I think it's a combination of both.
I agree. There was an issue before, and I can't remember the movie star that was involved in it, where people were furious that she was in a role. It was a skin color issue, too, and phenotype issue. Can't think of it, darn it. I was just wondering if that is crabism as well in a combination with colorism. Anyway, let me ask you this. And when it comes to celebrating and supporting each other in the pursuit of happiness and success, Dr. Wilson-Jones, you touched on this earlier, how important is it for black women to celebrate and support each other in the pursuit of happiness and get away from this crabism mentality? How is that even possible?
I think it's very, very important. But before I get to that, thank you so much, Donna and the other doctor, for bringing that thought into, because I was looking at colorism as more of a different perspective. But when you made the analysis of, you know, in combining the two, I could see the picture, which I hadn't really noticed or realized that particular picture again. So thank you both for doing that. As far as the pursuit of happiness and making sure that we celebrate each other, I think that is a wonderful thing. I think it makes us all happy, and I think it makes our homes and our family and our whole environment happy, because if we can celebrate the accomplishments of other people, then it not only promotes that individual, but it promotes that particular group as well.
Absolutely.
When we are celebrating others, and it's nothing wrong with that, you know, we tell principals to do that, to recognize the teachers. We tell chancellors to recognize faculty. We tell parents to recognize children. So as adults, with the people that we are associated with, or for people who are in our environment, I think it's a wonderful thing to celebrate those accomplishments, because when I can celebrate someone else, then I'm being celebrated as well. So
yeah,
I think
right.
That's very, very important to acknowledge and celebrate those things, the accomplishments of others.
Excellent. Ms. Meshach, what are your thoughts on celebrating each other as we're long, you know, pursuing happiness and success and getting away from crabism?
Oh, it's vital. And I feel, just piggybacking off of what she just mentioned, I feel that it's a state of emergency. And not only do we need to get that as my generation, you know, the 30s and up, but we have to get it quickly so that we can teach our younger women what to look out for and how to avoid this and just stop this piece.
Right.
Like I mentioned earlier, there's room enough for more than one star, you know,
That's
in
right.
the sky. And if we truly start believing that, then we don't have a problem celebrating someone else and saying, God, you are, you know, you're amazing. And,
right.
and Donna, I just want to quickly say I'm so proud of you, and I thank you for bringing this up. But you were that way with me. You know, is that you? Is that your picture on Twitter? You're beautiful. You know,
and
after you got to know me and talk to me, and you know, those things are huge. If
yes.
we're not doing that, if young girls don't see us doing that, they are not going to do it.
That's
they
right.
may not be getting that at home. They may not have anyone telling them. And I, you know, I went through this living in a very small Caucasian, you know, environment. They may not have anyone
mm-hmm.
telling them, you know what, you are special.
Mm-hmm.
You are beautiful. You know, you're smart. And find the little unique things about them. Look at your eyelashes or, you know, or look, whatever the case, look at your penmanship. Wow,
yeah.
this is what you can be. If we aren't doing that, our next generation is going, if we're experiencing the craftism still this far removed, you know, from the Lynch era, God, what's going to happen with our next when we're going in the opposite direction? So absolutely, I'm all for women promoting each other and encouraging each other and linking arms with each other and doing great things to eliminate this topic.
That's right.
Keep from coming back.
Yeah, Dr. Stiles, what are your thoughts on celebrating and supporting each other as we pursue, you know, in the pursuit of happiness and success?
We have to stop this vicious cycle. We have to understand the importance of unity. We have to understand that we have to respect one another, embrace our differences, embrace our knowledge, and be able to mentor and support one another. Because we cannot, I always say, nothing happens in extreme isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And if we remember that we have to work as a unit, that we are all, at the end of everything, we are part of the human race. And once we understand that, and we understand that we all come from God, from this universe. And so it's so important that we continue to uplift one another and we continue to support one another and teach our children our history, first of all, and the love and show our love for each other and show our love for our children, embrace them, their differences, and love them and love ourselves. Love yourself. And that's the most important thing.
Beautiful statements. I'm going to ask this question about all three of you, starting with Dr. Wilson-Jones. When it comes to writing your own success story, and all of us, I would assume, all of us have experienced craftism to a certain degree. When writing your own success story, Dr. Wilson-Jones, what made you successful and when you had to face craftism issues? How did you persevere? How did you get through it?
Well, first of all, my belief in God. So I just allowed God to order my steps, and that's what I ask Him all of the time. So that's the first thing. Listening to my mother and other women, because a lot of times who we are is because of the things that other women, we are elevated because we've been on the shoulders of other people. And I know I didn't quote it exactly. Someone said Theodore Roosevelt or someone. And also being persistent and determined. And those are the things that I attribute to my success, because you cannot stop and worry too much about those negative things. So you have to be persistent. You have to be determined. I start writing my goals down. I divorced in 1986, and I was working at a factory. I had no education at all. And I started writing my goals down, and every year that's what I did, and I would check my goals off. So just being determined and persistent, and most importantly, putting God first.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Ms. Majak, what about you? Like in writing your own success story, how did you deal with the crabism issues and persevere through, to become your success? How did you do that?
You know, it kind of along the same lines, it just me focusing on God, for one,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that, like I tell women, He made us all so uniquely different.
Right.
So if I focus on that piece, and if I help others to focus on what makes them special, then there's no need for competition. We complement each other.
Absolutely.
And I can work with someone who's Caucasian or Asian or Chinese,
mm-hmm.
and we can still complement each other. And me focusing, learning that helped me to overcome really dealing with that and being affected so strongly by that.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Dr. Stiles, what about with you?
I would have to say pretty much my fate and the ability to love myself and not judge myself as much. My mother, she was always there for me, and she's still here for me, even though she has transitioned. It's just everything the panel have pretty much mentioned is just staying tuned, staying connected with that spirit of divine and helping others along the way and helping them to understand who they are and their capabilities and their self-worth. Because when you're paying it forward, it comes back. And so, for me, that's what's so important, and that's what I try to instill within my children.
Beautiful. I think for me, it's been like everyone said, it's been God, my faith, a whole lot of prayer. And I also think, too, I believe in perseverance. I believe in, like Madam C.J. Walker had, to quote her, she used to say that you don't sit and wait for opportunities to happen. You get up to come your way. You get up and make things happen for yourself. And I think for me, I've had to deal with a lot of crabism issues, I think what pulled me through, other than my faith and belief in God and prayer, was the fact that I said, okay, if you're going to shut this door, we all know another door is going to open. But what I did, I opened up my own door, and I walked in, and I walked right through it. And I think what keeps me going, and even, and I can give you an example with the jealous competition. When there's a young lady who worked with me in the Culverson Project when I first started it, the talk radio show, and I had to let her go because of attitude issues and little things. And this person went out and put up a website using my same color, the same colors from my logo that I painstakingly designed myself. And people started coming back to me saying, you know, this is that part of you. But this particular website is using the term colorism and it's using your logo color. And I didn't realize it then until a friend of mine who's into psychoanalysis said to me, he said, that's jealous competition. Don't you see that? And I'm like, yeah, but I don't have time to be worrying about that because I'm on a mission and I'm opening up doors and, you know, knocking down the walls and breaking through ceilings to get where I need to go. But I think all of us, no matter what we do or where we go in life, we're going to run into the crabism being an issue. And I think what makes all of us so unique and such beautiful women, successful women of color, is that we're confident in who we are, we know who we are, and perseverance. You know, it's like all of us have written our own success stories in our own individual way. So I think... And Dr. Wilson-Jones, I want to say to you, I thank you, can't thank you enough for having a conversation with me, I think it was about a month ago when we talked about the crabism, because I never thought of it to relate it to colorism, and I never thought of how good of a show this would be to talk about it until I started telling people, oh, we're going to do a show, we're talking about crabism, and everyone was, oh, my gosh, you have to do this, you must do it, you know. Such a bad, big issue. And I'm saying, yeah, it's an issue. And I had a couple of people come back to me and say, no, you don't get it, Dr. C. It's a big, big issue. Where did you get the term crabism? I said, my good friend, Dr. Wilson Jones, Dr. Linda Wilson Jones. So we were having a conversation, and she was explaining her focus and why she wanted to study in this issue, and she used the term crabism. And I said, that's her term. She coined it. And I can't thank you enough because, you know, we go through routines every day, and we think about the crabs in the barrel mentality. And what we do is, and what I've done, you know, you just keep walking and try and ignore it. But it's just like with things that need to be addressed. If we don't stop and address these issues, it's going to continue. And Ms. Meshack made a good point where she said that cycle will continue from generation to generation. And we need to let our young girls especially see women, grown women, praising and celebrating each other and being happy as someone, and as they pursue happiness. And then, in turn, use that as a mold to help write our own success stories. So
exactly.
I think all of you, I think you guys have been great. This has been an awesome show. I love this format. We have to do this again. I like it with all of us with this format like this. I like the different perspectives, the conversation, dialogue. Ladies, this has been phenomenal.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, you guys really made my week for me because I was having one of those come back from being sick week, and it seemed like every time I turned around, something was just getting me to the ziz point. But you guys, you got rid of that for me tonight. So I can't thank you all. Dr. Linda Wilson Jones, Ms. Mika Meshack, Dr. Teresa Stiles, you ladies are awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for including me.
So are you, Donna.
Yes.
Thank you. But before I let you all go, I have to drop the bomb on you. This means after such a great show and great dialogue, I expect each one of you to write an article for the Journal of Colorism on crabism in this discussion. And I will harass you and taunt you for those articles until I receive them. That'll be for the June or July publication. I forgot to check. But I want to thank each and every one of you so very much. You've made this an excellent show. For me, it's important, it's meaningful, and it's enlightening because, you know, women, not just women of color, everybody, people in general, we need to start focusing more on unity. And I think discussions and dialogues like this will help us get closer. And hopefully what we've talked about tonight has really helped some people step outside of that little box and that little safety zone they're used to operating in, and step out and look at someone who you've done crabism issues to and try and change and embrace them and celebrate them, because that's what it's all about. It's about unity, and it's about helping each other make it into the ranks, respecting each other, and understanding and realizing that we're all different, and don't waste your time being jealous of someone else's success. Instead,
Absolutely.
Write your own success story or go to that person and say, hey, look, how can you help me get where I need to go?
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay,
do you need anything else? Just really quickly, I just got a tweet from my mom saying, you didn't tell me you were going to be on the show. So I just want to let my family know I didn't know before, but they are welcome to continue to join in and listen. It was just a pleasure for you to contact me and have me on today. So I appreciate that.
You make sure you tell Mom that you'll be coming back on here again, so let Mom know. And if you don't tell her in advance, I am innocent. I have nothing to do with it. I will tell your mom. I didn't know. I told her. I told her to tell you.
That's not right.
And then I'll get Dr. Wilson Jones and Dr. Stiles to back me up. But it's been great. And again, Dr. Wilson Jones, thank you for bringing this topic up. Thank you for creating that term, crabism. And you better get, what can she get on that? Because it's her term. I forgot. Anyway, I'm going to write a blog about it anyway, and make sure you get that for creating crabism. But listen, ladies, I would love for all of us to do this more often, get together, have a good show like this. I'm going to be in contact with you because I'm going to push all of you until I get you at least once a month coming on here doing this with me.
Fantastic.
Right. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much, ladies, and everyone have a great night. And once again, thank you for your time and your awesome thought processes. This has been wonderful.
Take care, Donna.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. All righty. Bye-bye.
Night. We had an awesome show today. My guests were Dr. Linda Wilson-Jones, Dr. Teresa Stiles, and Ms. Meshack. And, Jerry, you know, give you a quick sum. We talked about crabism, colorism, and issues, and how they are, they have, and continue to affect, you know, especially black women, and why we need to stop it. We brought up really good points, especially Ms. Meshack noted that, you know, how we need to stop this cycle, because when our young children see adults participating in such negative behavior, you know, it perpetuates that cycle and it keeps it going. So at the end of the day, when all is said and done, don't waste your time with being jealous of someone, being envious. Rather, look at yourself, examine who you are, sit down, look at your priorities, set some goals, milestones, and then work toward achieving them. And if you see someone who's really doing something and you admire them, reach out and say, hey, can you help me? Now, there's no guarantee that they're going to say, oh, sure, come on, work with me. But if they don't let that one person stop you or make you bitter or fall into a crabism mentality. What I think you should do is move on and ask somebody else. I'm a strong believer in giving back, and I'm helping right now so many people. And I believe in doing that because when you give back and you share and you help, you encourage and you help pull others into the rank, it makes you feel good about who you are, where you're going, and what you're doing in life. And most importantly, it's like my dad used to say, when someone passes away and you see the year they were born and the year they died and you see that dash in between, it's that dash in between that's really important, how you live there, your dash. You know, what did you do? Did you try to help others? Did you try and give back? I believe in helping and giving back as much as I can. And saying that, getting to my next point, what I wanted to bring up is that I started a couple years ago, I think it was 2002, I can't remember the exact year, I started what was called the Alex Intellectual Society, and the Alex is named after my late dad, that was his middle name, who was a true blue educator. And the Alex Intellectual Society is a group that I started. It's a support group for students within the United States and internationally. And I revived it, I think, in 2012. It started, I think, 2002 or 4, revived it in 2012. And I'm reviving it again. I kind of let it go because I've been so busy. But I'm bringing this up is because as a professor, when I was grading student papers this past weekend, and what I'm beginning to notice is that I'm seeing too many students of color who are really lacking severely with writing skills. It bothered me. I was really disturbed about it. And what I posted something on Facebook about it. And I have actually revived the Alex Intellectual Society. It's on Facebook. It's under facebook.com group ELEXIS. And the purpose of the Alex Intellectual Society is to work with students across the board, you know, undergrad, grad, and even lifelong learners. Your age is not an issue. To work with you and help you with your writing skills. It's too often, and I'll basically read what I wrote. It's too often that I'm finding that writing skills of graduate students are below the standard for graduate school, and it's too often that I'm finding that students of color are actually plagued with severe writing deficiencies, and that is not good. If you're in college, you're paying a great deal of money to get an education. It doesn't matter if you're going paying by a credit card, student loans, tuition reimbursement, regardless of how you're getting your education, you know, you need to make sure that you're getting a quality education. And when it comes to writing, ask, and, you know, go to a friend. Ask someone to read your documents before you submit them for a grade. Work on your writing skills. You know, use the grammar and spell check in Microsoft Word. Even with me sitting on dissertation committees, I'm finding graduate students of color really having severe writing deficiencies, and it is alarming. You know, with the job market being the way that it is, it's tough for everyone, especially for people of color. So, you know, we're marginalized when we cannot write a decent email, a memorandum, or a report. You know, and employers will note issues like this in your evaluation, which can be used as a reason for not giving you a raise or a promotion. And if you have challenges with writing, use the OWL, it's O-W-L, like the bird, the owl, at Purdue University. It's an online writing lab. Or hire someone to help you. Buy an APA style guide helper. You know, and it doesn't matter, and I can put so much emphasis on this, if you're an undergrad or a grad student, a lack of effective and quality writing skills will hold you back in life, trust me. And I say this to bring up a point. During my studies for my doctorate degree, there were a group of black students who wanted to sue the college, claiming it was racial discrimination. And some of them had approached me and wanted me to join in with them. You said there was racism against black students. And I asked them, you know, what were the issues? What were you talking about? I had not experienced these issues. And they said to me it was with their writing, with their papers they were submitting to school. They weren't getting passing grades. They were getting kicked out of the PhD program. So I met with a couple of them, and I read their papers. And honest to God, these students were getting kicked out of the PhD program, and they were not passing their classes because they could not write. I mean, and it was sad. My point is this, guys. You know, an education is supposed to help you attain a higher level of thinking as well as performance. Make sure that you're earning passing grades in college and not being given the benefit of the doubt or a pity grade. There's nothing worse than a pity grade or a grade where you're given a grade, and I do mean given, not earned, a grade just because of the effort you put in, because you did the assignment. And I can't put enough emphasis on this because this is really, it seems like it is almost like a systemic issue, for me at least, from what I'm seeing, for students of color. If you're handing in a paper and you know you have writing problems, even if you don't, have somebody else read your work. And a good way to find out if your writing is really good, read the document backwards. Start on the last page and start with the last sentence and read it backwards. Let me give you an example. Instead of saying the list included some of the following, you would read it backwards and say following the of some included list of. If you read it backwards, you will see where you're making typos, where there's grammatical errors, sentence structure errors. Microsoft Word has a tool, the grammar and spell check tool. It will check your document. If you've written something that is grammatically incorrect, if it's a poor choice of words, if the flow of thoughts is not there, it'll help you. But I urge you to please make sure that you focus in on improving and enhancing your writing skills. And I've seen students, and I can't say this enough. I've had a student say to me, but I'm a straight-A student. Here's a paper I submitted last term, and I got an A on it. And I'm reading the paper, and I'm like, good God, you know, Miss Agnes, you could not have received an A, and the paper's written terrible, horrible. So, why in the heck am I saying all of this? I'm saying this to say to everybody out there that if you need help with your writing, you're a college student, grad, undergrad, even high school level, join up with the Ellis Intellectual Society on Facebook. And what I'm going to start doing is recruiting professors and educators and professionals to work as external mentors to help you with your writing. If you need to help, reach out. You can reach out to me, and I'll try and connect you with someone, and I'll help you as much as I can. And remember, you know me. I have a lot on my plate between the projects, consulting, research, writing. I will make the time to help you, help as many people as I can. And all that I ask that you do in return is that you pay it forward by helping somebody else and help pull someone else into the ranks. We cannot change where the ball was dropped in the past, but I assure you this, we sure as hell can change the future by networking, by you reaching out, asking for help. Do not allow yourself to waste money. trying to get a quality education and you graduate and you can't write. And there's no critical thinking process that's going on. I focus in on student achievement and student success, and I really believe that together we can bring about the change that is needed to help all of our students, regardless of the age, improve and reach higher ground in life. So if you need help, reach out, and as I stated earlier, I will do my best to help you find the time to connect you with people. So the group is called the ELEX Intellectual Society, ELEX. If you're having problems, find it on Facebook. Just reach out to me and contact me, and I'll get you involved. And we'll find mentors to work with you to help you with writing and getting through the educational process. So having said that, everyone, and wrapping up, let me give you brief announcements. With our Journal of Colorism Studies, as the editor-in-chief, I am finalizing and getting everything wrapped up. Our first journal, which I think is excellent, will be published by the end of March. That is an exciting venture that I'm working on right now. With regard to the National Survey on Colorism, I will be scheduling another meeting probably mid-March. So if you are interested in joining up with the National Survey on Colorism, please reach out and join the committee. We have some really good, cool people on the committee. We're going to get that going. We're going to get that going, and we're going to actually see if it's really going to be feasible to actually conduct this study. And if we determine that it's not going to be feasible, it's not going to be worthwhile, then we will let it go. But right now, it looks like it's going to go forward. With regard to Complexity Magazine, I will be getting some information out there hopefully in the next couple of weeks and trying not to put off the launch of it. The launch is scheduled for June. With my schedule and how everything goes, we'll keep you posted. With I Am Beautiful ICP, with the poetry and essay competitions, I have to first apologize because I had the wrong email address for the poetry submissions. So if you have submitted a poem and you didn't receive a response or an acknowledgement from me, please resubmit your poem again. I put the correct address on I Am Beautiful's contest page. We have a lot of great submissions with essays and poems, and I will be getting them ready to get over to our review board members who are actually going to review and judge them, our judges, for the contest. And our judges are people who are experts in colorism, who are also professors, who are, really good with the writing. I think, my last thing is the colorism listserv. What we've done with the Colorism Project is that we've started a list server, which is a list server that you can register. You can find information about on the Colorism Project's website. And the list server actually has, it's a list server where you go. So feel free to join the new Colorism list serve. Our membership has grown tremendously. I originally set it up for a 30-day trial period, and I did that because you couldn't really find a list server or information that really focused in on current events and issues on colorism and race issues. So that colorism listserv is going to focus in on colorism, race issues, social justice issues. And, I'll send out the messages to the mass to the group maybe once or twice a week, depending on how many entries we get. And you, as part of the listserv, feel free to send recommended links, websites, to me that we can post on the listserv. And I will have Diego will be running the colorism listserv for me. So if you have any questions about that, let us know. With regard to the Colorism Project and I Am Beautiful, we're making so much progress. We have so many projects going on. If you have emailed me, have sent me an email, or if you've called me and I have not responded, I ask that you forgive me. You can either reach out to me again or give me some time because I have over 210 emails that I have to respond to. And I will get that done. So I'm just busy. But I thank you all for listening. I thank you for your support of I Am Beautiful ICP and the Colorism Project. And I also want to share this, and I'm going to shut up and get off the air. I've had a lot of people reach out to me with I Am Beautiful ICP to actually host to come out, so they're having like birthday parties for their daughters, to come out and give presentations about I Am Beautiful and Living Life Beautiful. And what really made me feel great when I was feeling bad last week, when a colleague who's a judge in this area wanted me to provide a two-hour presentation at her daughter, her living granddaughter's sweet 16 birthday party Saturday. So I will let you guys know. And what really made me feel good, everyone, is that when she said to me, I was so happy to see I Am Beautiful. And when I saw that a black woman did all of this work and you created I Am Beautiful on your own, I was so excited. I was so impressed because we don't see anything like this for our girls. And to Dr. Jackson, I thank you so much. And then we started receiving more inquiries and requests to do birthday parties. So we're super, super busy. But I just want to tell you guys that I created I Am Beautiful to help girls of color, most specifically black American girls who are dealing with so many issues with skin color. So we're here for you. If you want a presentation, a workshop, reach out to me. You can find it on the website at iambeautiful-icp.com. I believe my email address is on it. If not, I think it's a link. It's a form you can fill out. And if you do send me forms, because I'm getting a lot of forms from the servers where people are asking me information or wanting to schedule presentations with the Colorism Project and I Am Beautiful, but you're not giving me your email addresses. So please, if you submitted a secure one of the forms, contact forms from the website for I Am Beautiful or Colorism Project, please make sure you include your email address or resubmit it again, so that I can respond and communicate with you. It's always easier for me through email versus a phone call. So having said that, I think I've talked enough. My voice is held up. I thank all of you for tuning in each week and listening. And I urge you to look forward. We have some really good and exciting programs that we're rolling out this year. And once again, with the Journal of Colorism Studies, the new call for submissions will be going out, I think, a couple of weeks, but I'll give you a heads up. The volume that we will publish in June or July is going to be a volume that's only going to consist of essays on colorism. So I urge you, students, graduate, undergraduate students, anyone, if you're a writer, you don't have to be involved in academia. You do not have to be, and let me correct myself, you don't have to be a professor or involved in academia. Anyone, if you have a story to tell, you have an essay you would like to write on colorism, please feel free to reach out and get involved. Having said that, everybody, have a great night. Enjoy your weekend, and I look forward to you tuning in next Thursday. Good night, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to The Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may contact Dr. Culbreth at 1-800-905-2136. You may email your questions to drculbreth@colorismproject.com. We're looking forward to you tuning in next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, remember, dare to be different and dream in color. This is Dr. Culbreth, signing off for the Dynamics of Colorism. Good night, everyone.